Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler and excited to be here with you. A beautiful summer midday around the country and just enjoying this summer break. Many of you that may have kids at home or you're finding some vacation time or just enjoying the nice weather where you may be. Welcome to the show. My name is Mark Kohler, your host, talking about asset protection, tax strategies, living the dream, trying to hold it all together. And if you're an entrepreneur or even an entrepreneur on the side with your day job, a little something brewing on the side, a little real estate something, this show is for you. We're going to have an amazing show today, little tips and legal tips, tax tips. I've got an incredible guest joining us today. I know you'll walk away with something that'll help you better succeed, and I'm excited to be here working with you. Thanks so much for spreading the good word, too. I want to thank many of you that share the link to the show, and we get new followers and listeners all the time, and I appreciate many of you that share this with your social network, friends, and family so they can be a part of the show, too. So today, let me just tell you, of course, we're going to be talking about the death topic. Not really exciting. I know that's kind of what your opportunities are with this. That's what's going to be exciting. But talking about death and a loved one passing is not a very fun topic, so I want to be sensitive to that. But there's a lot of related issues with that when it comes from a tax and legal standpoint. And so we're going to take a couple different looks at that today. We're going to be looking at ways that you can, well, I don't want to sound rude here, but take advantage of those families that are disorganized and in probate, and you may find a real estate opportunity and how to maximize that opportunity through inside training and information of how to deal with the probate process. We're going to have Chris Albin out of Chicago joining us shortly, an expert in this area. He's fantastic, and he will be sharing some tips and strategies on how to approach probate from an investor standpoint. Then on the flip side, we've got another expert joining us, Ray Creel from Southern California, who will be talking about how to handle the estate closing of a family member that's passed away and ways to handle it properly for tax reporting, keeping the family together, distributing the assets, accounting for everything. A lot of those little things that if you've been appointed a trustee or executor, you may not know what to do. So that those of you that are proactive and organized, you're not going to have the Chris Albin and the investors of the world taking advantage of real estate because you're going to be on top of it. So we're going to talk about both sides of the equation today. I think many of you will find it very, very helpful. Excited to talk about the newsletter a little bit here. We've got some great topics today in the newsletter. Boy, I don't even know where to start here. Matt Sorensen wrote an excellent article on a IRA case where a gentleman got hosed on an IRA investment because he didn't follow the procedures properly. He's our tax tip today. I have a sneaky suspicion that he's going to maybe share that with us and talk about what to do there. And then I've got a couple articles that I've co-written with some others. I'm excited to have them here on a regular basis on the show. I wrote an article with Ray Creel, who will be joining us today, on estate closings. What is an estate closing and what's that all about? So as an estate closer, which we'll be talking about later today, there's a great article on that. You may want to read up on that with Ray Creel and I. And then Jaron Bergeson, a regular contributor to the show, who handled the show last week for me while I was gone, followed up his topic last week on trademarks with an excellent article on what's a trademark, how should I proceed? When do I proceed with a trademark? So that's a great little article for those of you that have a special name that you're marketing. There's a lot of upcoming live events. Matt Sorensen is speaking this Thursday in Southern California. If you're a follower of ours, you're going to be getting a notice as to when and where that speaking event is. Matt will maybe even when I think he's our tipster today, so he'll be on. He can share a little bit more about his Thursday event. You'll be getting an email from us if you're a follower of ours in the local area. And I myself have a bunch of stuff coming up in August, so put some dates out there. We've announced our fall workshop series. I'll be in Philadelphia, Sacramento, Seattle, Orange County, and Honolulu. So please look at those. I've actually reduced my prices for these one-day workshops to help get more people there, make it affordable and simple. For these one-day workshops, it's $200, and your guest is $100. Come out for the day. It's tax-deductible, and I promise you, you're going to walk away with a lot more tax savings than a $200 or $300 investment. So please look into that if you're in the area and want to make a tax-deductible travel trip to one of those areas, too, for a workshop. Last note, just real quick, I want to throw this out. I did a recording on how to build an incredible marketing plan. I have a great marketing team here, and it's a chapter in my book, What Your CPA Isn't Telling You. I have a passion for marketing. I love it. And I've learned a lot. I actually went to a week-long training on building a good business marketing plan because I consult with so many business owners that ask about it. They don't have a in-house marketing director or a business consultant. They oftentimes would turn to their CPA or business planner for some advice. And so, guys, I shot a sweet little video. It's 2 to 3 minutes long. Please check it out. And it is true, I did finish scout camp last week, and so I've still got a little scruff left over. I don't know if I'm going to shave that off or not. So if you see some dirt on my face, you know, let me know. It may not be my style. It may not be my best look. Let me know. We'll see. If my wife has her way, it's coming off. So we'll see. And finally, I want to just say this. I'm doing a webinar Wednesday night, tomorrow night. It's my monthly webinar. It's $20 a month for clients. Please call up Justin Brault if you want to get registered for that. And it's a full hour in front of my computer screen and webcam where I break down a topic and field questions. And we're going to be talking about marketing plans for a full hour tomorrow night. It's 5 p.m. to 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific time. So if you're interested in that, call Justin Brault. You can also sign up on the website for the Strategic Wealth Alliance webinar series. You get access to all the old webinars. There's an hour recording per month on just incredible topics that I get in more in depth than I can in any workshop or any radio show. I know you'll find the value there. And once you sign up, you get the live event each month and access to all the old webinars. There's at least 14 recordings there. So check that out and contact Justin at the office if you'd like to register. Let me give you the phone number too, just to make it easy. I know some of you are like, where do I call? It's 435-586-9366, 435-586-9366, and we hope to see you there tomorrow night at 5. So without any further ado, there's our kind of news of the hour, if you will. Don't forget your payroll. Oh, upcoming tax deadlines. Don't forget your payroll tax reports that are due in 3 days. On the newsletter, there's some links to Deborah or Cynthia's email to help you get your payroll report in. If you have an S-Corp, you more than likely need to get your payroll report in. If you haven't started payroll, no report due. But once you start payroll, you got to keep it going. So make sure you touch base with them. And again, I'm grateful to welcome my lifelong friend and blood brother and partner in the law firm, the amazing Matt Sorensen, author of the book, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook. Welcome, Matt Sorensen.
Oh, high five.
High five.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate that that great introduction. That makes me feel so special.
Thank you. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm excited to hear your tip today.
Yeah.
Maybe
I'm glad you're back
doing
the radio show. It's always better when you're here. No offense to Jam or me, but, you know, there's a reason you usually do it most.
Yeah, it's been
And
it's
why it's
been
called the Mark Kohler Show. I mean, it's not the same without Mark Kohler, so.
Yeah, well. Thank you. It's been a lot of off and on time with speaking engagements and on out at Scout Camp. So thanks for covering for me. And Matt, tell us about your workshop Thursday night. What's going on there?
Yes, so I will be in Long Beach on Thursday night, starting at 6:30 is when the event starts. I'll probably start speaking around 7. But, yeah, it's for the foreign investors, buy investors, Phoebe Group in Long Beach. It will go out in the newsletter. It's at the Grand Long Beach Event Center. Email me if you want any details. Obviously, as you mentioned, we'll be having a announcement blast going out later today to those in the Southern California area. But I'll be talking about self-directed IRA investing strategies in real estate.
Okay. Well, if you're in the local area, I know it'll be worth your while to get over there. I may throw it out there as just a suggestion. You know, I'm going to throw it out for those that are surfers. Friday morning, I think after the event Thursday night, Matt and I are going to be surfing San Onofre. So if you want to come out with your GoPro and shred with Matt Sorensen, you're welcome. I don't know, maybe that was a little strong to say Matt Sorensen will be shredding on a surfboard, but...
Yeah, I don't think I'm at shredding level. I'm at floating is good enough for me right now.
Well, there you go. Well, we make that invitation all the time. We'd like to have fun here. So if you're Matt's going to be staying the night and then off on an airplane late morning. So we're going to get a little surf session in the morning. But Thursday night, great workshop, folks. If you want more information on it, please call Justin Brault at the office. He can send you more details, and we're going to send out an email blast later today to let people know. So you got a tip for us too, Matt?
Yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit more about my newsletter article. It was kind of an interesting one for a number of reasons, but a really important case that highlights some of the basic issues that if you don't follow properly when you're using a self-directed IRA and buying real estate, that you can screw up the IRA. And I think some people may read the newsletter article and be like, well, I know that, but a lot of people, you'd be surprised. I seem to talk to a lot of people that fall into this basic trap of what happened in this case. So I'll go ahead and explain the basic facts, though. But there's, I think, some just important takeaways as you're looking at self-directing an IRA to buy real estate or other alternative investments.
No, and it is good you bring up this example because it is sad. This guy got really hammered from the IRS, and it was a very innocent mistake. So, yeah, give us the rundown.
So there's an individual who had an IRA with Charles Schwab, and Charles Schwab, incidentally, did used to have alternative assets, and you could buy alternative assets with them like real estate or LLCs, but they stopped doing that a while ago. But anyway, so the IRA owner has an IRA at Charles Schwab and intends the IRA to acquire real estate in Bryan Head, Utah. For those of you who don't know, Bryan Head, Utah is close to Cedar City, Utah, where the Utah office is. Just a little odd coincidence here. But he wanted that IRA to buy real estate in Bryan Head. And what he did was, rather than having his IRA invest and buy the property, he completed a distribution of his IRA. He filled out forms, and they sent the money to closing at a title company. They didn't even send the money to him. They just sent it directly to closing because he wanted to buy a piece of property. And, you know, and then they said, we can't hold real estate, so they just distributed the money out. Well, as you may know, everybody may know, distribution of an IRA results in taxes. So he gets a 1099-R and has to end up paying taxes on the $100,000-plus that was distributed. Now, the IRA owner had done some research on the web, and this is where sometimes people get into trouble, and read, hey, an IRA can own real estate. And he thought, I used this IRA money, the money used to be in my IRA, I used it to buy real estate. How come it shouldn't be subject to tax? He thought, I just get to keep it as an asset. It's just an IRA. And he even told the title company, change the deed on the title of the property into my IRA's name. And they did. They put it in like Charles Schwab IRA, whatever his name Dabney was. And he's thinking he's fine. Well, the IRS didn't agree. They kept trying to collect on him on the 1099-R and eventually went to tax court. And there's a couple important things the tax court looked at. The first thing they looked at was, well, you signed a distribution form and took a distribution. You should have read what you were signing. The account owner said he didn't understand what he was signing. He thought he was signing something to tell him to invest the money. and to buy the real estate. But the second biggest issue that happened and problem was the court looked at Charles Schwab's policies and said, Charles Schwab's the trustee of this prior IRA, and they won't let you buy real estate with the IRA. Because they won't let you buy real estate with the IRA, there was no way your IRA even could have bought this property, even if you did do it properly. So therefore, it has to be a distribution, and they ended up, you know, he ended up losing and wasn't able to keep this real estate as an asset in his IRA. Instead, it was distributed, and he ended up having to pay tax. Now, that may seem simple enough, but the important thing to take away from this is if you're going to self-direct a retirement account to buy an alternative investment like real estate, you want to make sure you're using a self-directed IRA custodian. This is not like a Charles Schwab or a Merrill Lynch. You know, I mean, you want to use a self-directed custodian who lets your IRA buy real estate and own real estate as an asset. That's the key. Roll the existing retirement plan money over from the regular IRA, for example, a Charles Schwab IRA, to a self-directed IRA, and have this self-directed IRA then buy and own the real estate. That self-directed IRA receives the rental income on the real estate, receives the gain if you sell a property. Again, the IRA doesn't pay tax when it does those things because it gets that great retirement plan treatment, but then it can stay as an asset of an IRA. Don't sign forms and distribute the money out and think that you're buying real estate and it's going to be part of a retirement plan investment.
Well, Matt, great advice and tip and comment. And I just want to throw out one kind of corrective option, folks, that if you're in this situation, and we'll move on here quickly, but if you've taken a distribution from your IRA to buy something and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't do it properly, you could classify it as a 60-day rollover, and you might be able within 60 days to easily correct the situation by putting the money back, borrowing money to put the money back, and then moving it around to correct it. But after 60 days, you're pretty much SOL, and I'm not talking statute of limitations. So think about that, folks. Be careful. So is this show regulated by the FTC? Did I really just say that? Anyway, well, Matt.
I'll have to correct that.
Yeah, I got to correct that. Matt, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, folks, if you haven't got his book yet, it's awesome, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook. It's incredible.
Yeah, you know, it's got 5 stars on Amazon. I just want to say, and it's got a lot of reviews, and, you know, like the iPhone 5 only has like, you know, 4.5 stars. So there's a lot of products out there on Amazon way below mine. So if that's any indication, 5 stars on Amazon.
There you go. If you're thinking of an iPhone 5 or Matt's book, you'll be more satisfied with Matt's book, apparently. So
yep. Hey.
Okay, well, Matt, we'll see you out here.
So.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Matt, we'll see you out here Thursday. And, folks, if you want to see Matt speak in Orange County Thursday night, please give us a buzz. We'll give you more details. And you can catch us at San Onofre Friday morning at probably 7 a.m. Out in the water with the sharks. Matt, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
All right, see ya. Okay, well, folks, we've got one more tipster for you, and then we're going to jump into our topic of the day. We have a regular guest that joins us, but we only get him maybe once a month if we're lucky. He's extremely busy. He's our top CPA at Kohler & Ayer CPAs. He puts in a ton of hours. He's just amazing. He's a new partner at Kohler & Ayer CPAs, the one and only Dustin Johnson. Dustin, thanks for being here on the show with us.
Wow, Mark, that's quite the introduction. You better hope that your other partners weren't listening in on that top CPA.
They never listen.
I'll take it.
Yeah, well, they never listen, so you're okay. You're good. We can talk trash. So now this is a lot of pressure here because you've got to save our listeners some taxes here with your little tip today. What do you got for us?
I know, you really...
set the bar high.
You did set the bar high. Well, here's what I've run into a few times this week, and it's nothing new, and you brought up payroll that's due here in 3 days for second quarter. But I'm seeing a lot of people that aren't doing their health insurance correctly through payroll, and it's costing them a lot of money. They're either saying, yeah, I told my payroll company that I paid my health insurance premiums through here, but they're paying the Social Security and Medicare taxes on it, or they're treating them as a regular employee and not a 2% shareholder. So we're either having to go back and pay money to amend those returns, or the client's just saying, hey, it's not worth it. We'll do it right next year.
Well, this is a great topic. Now, Dustin, let me say this right off the bat. So anybody listening, especially small business owners out there that already have a small business health insurance plan, or let's assume you have an individual plan, but you own a small business. Dustin, wouldn't you say the first rule of thumb here is always let your business pay the premium? We're going to talk about how to report it here in 2 seconds. I think that's where you're going with this. But the first issue is always let your business pay the health insurance premium. Then we'll find out how to report it in the most strategic way. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Now, it's a little different because we have people with HSAs that want their business to pay that too. And typically we tell them with the HSA, no, pay that one personally because of the filing requirements. But
yeah,
or
make your and let me clarify what you just said. Make your contribution to the HSA separate from the business, but you still pay for your insurance premiums out of the company.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. So always pay the premium out of the business. Now, what I think you are, and everybody's business is a little different, but I think what you're talking about is if you have an S corp and you're paying the premium out of the business, tell us what that reporting trick is here. This is a very unique one.
Okay, what you're required to do if you're a more than 2% shareholder of an S corporation, have the corporation pay your health insurance premiums, but it's you have to report it on your W-2. It needs to be reported in box one of your total wages. So you're going to take your wages plus your health insurance and your premiums and include in box one. However, those health insurance premiums aren't subject to the other FICA taxes, your Social Security and your Medicare taxes. So we're going to avoid paying the payroll taxes on them, but we need to report them in box one.
It sounds simple, but if you don't do this, you're not allowed to take the deduction on the front page of your return if you don't report it through the W-2, correct?
Exactly, and that's a dollar-for-dollar write-off against your income, as opposed to putting it on Schedule A as an itemized deduction. Even though they're the exact same health insurance premiums, the reporting depending on how you put them on your W-2, it could save you thousands of dollars depending on some people's premiums.
Yep. Now, folks, if you're started an S-Corp and you haven't started payroll yet because you don't have profit, or you have an LLC, or you have a sole proprietor, you're not going to have to stress about this issue. And Dustin, you concur, right? I mean, if you just have a basic small business, still have the business pay your premium. But it's when you start payroll, you've got to let your payroll company know that you're paying for insurance premiums out of the business. Would you agree with that?
Yep, we do that. Now, again, that would be to get in the routine of doing it that way. But if we don't have wages through the S corporation, the health insurance premiums won't be deducted on the front page of your tax return. So there's, let's get in the routine and have the business pay for them. That's great. But we won't get the deduction the same way until we start taking a salary out of the corporation.
Well, and maybe that salary is simply the health insurance premiums. We just do a W-2 in that amount. That could be a strategic move so that we can at least get that write-off.
No, that's a great point too, Mark. But what we need to be concerned about in that situation, and this happened this week also, is that the client took, I'm going to say, a $5,000 payroll, and then had health insurance premiums of $6,000. So box one showed $10,000, what numbers? I said
11,000.
So 11,000 in box one wages. Sorry, I'm changing the numbers up, so I got them confused a little bit. But we've got 11,000 in total wages, but we only had 5,000 in Social Security and Medicare wages. Another rule that we have to abide by is that we can only deduct the amount of health insurance premiums up to the amount of Social Security wages that we take. So even though we put the $6,000 on the W-2, because we only had other regular wages subject to the payroll taxes of $5,000, we were limited to the $5,000 write-off for health insurance premiums. The remaining amount had to be written off on Schedule A, so it was basically a loss deduction. So if we're going to do it that way, and that's the strategy, Mark, that you brought up, we need to, if we've got $5,000 in health insurance premiums, we have to have at least $5,000 of regular wages that are we're going to pay the payroll taxes on to be able to deduct the $5,000 of health insurance premiums.
Oh, that's great. Now, folks, if this sounded like a bunch of garbly goop to you and you're about ready to swerve off the road and fall asleep as you're listening, driving down the road, please do not fall asleep. Here's the point. Be aware. This is why you listen to this show. We're trying to identify red flags, issues to consider. Every time I talk to a new client, they say, I don't have any type of conversation with my accountant. I have to bring ideas to them, and they don't identify these sorts of issues. I don't know what's going on. Folks, you're the captain of your own ship. Knowing little tips like this are very important because just another example this week, Dustin, I'm just going to share this too. We had a client that was a little frustrated with us because he said, hey, I changed the ownership of my corporation throughout the year, and you guys did the tax return wrong, so fix it. And I'm like, well, whoa, 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 you didn't even tell us you changed the corporate ownership. How are we supposed to know that? And so there is some ownership on your guys' part as the client to make sure you identify and are aware of certain things that you need to bring up. And this is an important one, folks. Again, if you're paying health insurance premiums through your company and maybe you're not covered under a spouse or a full-time job, you're paying for those premiums through your business, bring that up with your accountant. And if they look like deer in headlights, you've got the wrong accountant. So, again, it may have sounded like a lot of technical jargon, but hopefully we identified an important issue for many of you listening today. Dustin, thanks. That's good stuff.
Perfect. Hey, thanks for clarifying that a little bit. And that is the key point, I guess, the takeaway from a lot of these. I may get into make it a little too technical or too advanced when I need to just kind of make it broad, but it's making you as a client aware of possible savings. So perfect. Thank you.
I love it. Good man. Well, how was scout camp for you? I know you hit the mountains. Did you come back with an extra little Rocky Mountain beard there or not?
I did, actually. My kids didn't like it very much. It was too rough and scratchy. But we went to Havasupai. You ever hiked into Havasupai?
No, my son has. It's a brutal hike, 16 miles, I guess, round trip. But it's beautiful once you get there, huh?
It is, yeah. We really took it to these young men. They figured out they could do hard things, so because it's a brutal hike. But we had a lot of fun.
Well, folks, this is a great reminder. Our headquarters are in southern Utah, the land of national parks, and there are so many amazing hikes in and around Zions and Bryce Canyon and Kolob Canyon and Narrows, and oh my gosh, the list goes on and on. So folks, take a tax-deductible trip. Go visit Dustin and hike Angel's Landing, 2,000-foot cliffs looking over these amazing edifices. So anyway, just a side note. Dustin, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you. Well, folks, we are now to the bottom of the hour, and the topic for today, we're going to dive in feet first. I am so excited. This is going to be a really informative half hour here as we really break down a topic that many people don't discuss. So let me set the stage here, and I want to bring out our first guest here in a moment. But the topic here, of course, is what happens if we're faced with the passing of a loved one. We may be the trustee, we may be the executor. It's a new role we've never played before. We're going through the grieving process. We don't know how to handle the accounting or tax returns or what to expect. Who do we turn to for help? Well, there's a unique role that an advisor can play in this, and it's called an estate closer. And we're going to be talking about estate closings and what you can do to keep the cost down and expedite the closing of estate and do it properly. But a lot of people don't employ an estate closer. They maybe didn't have a family trust. Their property gets sucked into probate, and they were disorganized. Grandpa and grandma didn't want to do any planning, or maybe they were caught off guard in the midlife, wonderful season of their life when death was not even planned for, and their assets are in disarray. Well, there's also an opportunity there. For some of you that are real estate investors looking for undervalued property, under market value property, and looking for strategies to acquire incredible rental properties or even rehabs and fix and flips, you can take advantage of these situations, and someone's going to. When these families are disorganized and their estate is going through probate, if you're on your game and you know the tricks and strategies, you can take advantage of this and find some great real estate deals. So today we're going to talk about both sides of that equation, and I want to bring out here first Chris Albin, the guy that's going to tell us how bad it can really be. Before we talk about what you should be doing, let's talk about how bad it can be. Now, Chris Albin, he's been on our show several times before, just an amazing real estate investor. Over the years, he's bought hundreds of properties. He's out of Eastern Illinois. He's manages one of my rental properties owned by my health savings account. I'll bring up his last little trip by my rental property. It's a great little meth lab. But Chris is just an incredible educator. He's a real estate broker, family man. And so we're so excited to have him here with us. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, so now we've got to wrap up this story. I believe it's true. The last time you went to go check on my property, it was shut down by the police on that street. Is that right? Whatever happened there?
No. I had somebody from California who was, they realized that buy and hold didn't work really well where they lived, and buy and hold works really well in the Midwest, and they trust my management, so they drove out to take a look at some stuff. And as we were driving by, he's one of your clients, and he said, now Mark said he has a house out here. Where is it? And I said, well, public records would indicate that it's that house. And then we drove one block over, and the police had somebody arrested along the side of the road. So it wasn't quite the way it sounds as you tell it.
Oh, okay.
But he took pictures, and he said, well, I got to tell Mark about this.
Yeah, I'm serious. He told me that it was the arrest was on my street, and it was all, you couldn't even get by it, but folks, I don't want to dissuade you. Dissuade you from investing out there. It's been a fantastic rental, and I know Chris, you've take tours around and do education one on one with folks as well as workshops, and it's just awesome. So it's been a great rental. I think I've had it almost 4 or 5 years, and I really appreciate all you do for our clients out there.
Yeah, it's you know, buy and hold makes sense.
Yeah, it's awesome. Okay, now, Chris, let's dive right into this. What are some strategies? I know we don't have a ton of time, and we probably need to have you on a one-hour webinar where we can dive into the details, but what opportunities lie in probate? What type of deals have you found because families are disorganized and their real estate ends up in probate? What's the opportunity there?
Right, yeah. I always tell people that when people have a challenge, often they end up on a list in the courthouse, and my students know how to access those lists and find deals. Three things sell real estate. It's price, it's condition, and it's marketing. So what we want to do is we want to beat the marketing. We want to get there before anybody knows it's for sale. And then all we have to deal with is price for its condition. And if we can beat the price, then we score. So what I do is I look at lists of challenges in the courthouse, and one list is the probate index. So when somebody does not plan for death, if they don't have a living trust that lives on after they do, if they don't have their assets passed on to other people before their death, then when they die, that doesn't mean that they don't own stuff. And what has to happen is their heirs have to file probate. The purpose of probate is to liquidate assets, pay liabilities, and then distribute to the heirs. And that can be a time-consuming process. Generally speaking, when somebody files a probate case, what they're doing is they're trying to figure out how to pay the hospital bill or how to pay the mortgage payment or whatever it is. They're not thinking, I need to sell the house. So when I or my students get in there and say, you know, we can take this asset for a fair price, and you don't have to hire a realtor, you don't have to hire an auctioneer, many times that's helpful to the estate. But that's what we do. We find those estates who have assets, they want to sell their house. I even have students who go in there for personal property. I have students who buy paintings and antiques and things out of probate. The whole thing is you have to find out those people who have the challenges, and the people who have the challenges are the people who failed to plan.
Now, could you give us an example of a real estate deal that you or one of your students has done recently, and give us some of the margins that can happen in this situation. Do you have an example handy?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't have an example. I talked to a person in Washington, D.C. just this morning, and she's also one of your clients. But she called me up, and she was having some challenges with the process of probate. And what we did, we talked through some things. But she tends to buy. What she said is she is still doing deals. She gets about a 10 to 15% response rate on her contacts. So what she does is she finds those properties that are in probate. She sends letters to the owner, to the heirs, to the executors, executrixes, the personal representatives, and then they call her, and it's a really easy conversation. She then goes in, she looks at the property, she will make them an offer, and then they decide, yes, we'll take the offer, or no, we want to list it with a realtor. But she does it as a business. I have done it as a business. My challenge is it's a very cash-intensive business, and I live in a buy-and-hold area and not a fix-and-flip area. So you can buy one or two of those with the cash on hand, but then you've got to, you know, you got to sell some things. You got to do some other things. So I tend to gravitate to those lists in the courthouse that are more conducive to seller financing. But probate tends to be a cash-intensive business, and I know that I have a student in Sacramento, and I use his example. I always tell my students, when you go in, you make a good deal, send me an email, show me the details. They always promise they do, and then I only learn about them later because they never do. So there are plenty of times. I used to make quite a bit of money doing the fix and flip in probate. Then banks kind of changed their criteria on lending, so I tend to do a lot of buy and hold now. But the point is that if you're in an area where fix and flip, buy and hold, fix and flip, buy and sell makes a lot of sense, probate is a really good way to enter that market, because what you do is you really beat one of those three criteria for selling real estate. You know, to sell real estate, has to be the right price for its condition, and people have to know about it. If we can get there before anybody knows about it, then we win.
Well, and it seems like a lot of these families, there's usually pressure. And I'm not trying to say that you're preying on anybody's during the grieving process, but they've got pressure to pay bills. They may be serving as executor or trustee while maintaining their own full-time job and family members, and they're looking for a quick way to close the estate, and they don't know exactly what they're doing. And so when you can come in with a cash offer, and it's not to take advantage of anyone, but come in with something that's fair and see the opportunity for cleanup and rehab. I remember an offer, it was in Salt Lake City about 10 or 15 years ago, that my wife and I went in. I had a janitorial business as I was going through college, and there was a probate property, and this guy had died in the home, and one of the church members had said, "Hey, Mark, I know you do cleanup, and we did construction cleanup and all that. Why don't you come over and look at this place? I know the estate, they just want to get this thing sold and get it out from under us." And I made an offer of like $40,000, and the property was worth $80,000, but it needed a lot of cleanup, not per se work, but cleanup. And I was about ready to close the deal, and then a young little couple came in and offered $42,000, not much more, but the estate thought, oh, bleeding heart, this is a young little couple, they're going to actually live in there, Mark's just going to flip it. So they sold it to this other couple out from under me, and I was so bummed. I was like, I was going to pay for law school with that. But anyway, it was a great opportunity, again, because people are in a crisis, they need to move quickly, and I guess you probably see that all the time.
Right. I always tell people that in all of my classes, I say that motivation changes with time and circumstance. So early on, everybody wants the most money they can get. It's only logical. When somebody, here's what happens. Grandma says to you, "You are a very responsible person. Mark, I would love it if you would be my representative when I die. I want you to be my executor. And you say, Grandma, I would love to do that. Thank you for honoring me with that. You have no idea what you just agreed to. You agreed to a part-time job. And,
yeah, that's right.
And most people don't understand the amount of work that it takes. And early on in the process, they have to compile a lot of information. They have to be responsible for a lot of things. And eventually, that motivation to get top dollar starts to erode into a motivation to simply get it done. That's not a universal thing, but that happens often enough to where it creates deals for people like me and my students. It's not that we're out there being a vulture and preying on the deceased. What we're doing is we're helping people who want to move quickly get out. We're wanting people, you know, we'll take it as is. We'll let you just go and get on with your life. And so when we find people in that nature, and keep in mind, some of these executors are in their 80s and 90s. They have better things to do than to count dishes.
Yep. Now, one quick question here before we move to the other piece of this equation, and that's maybe the families that can think in advance so they can avoid this sort of crisis. I had a question from one of our listeners here via email. Chris, how does one acquire these probate lists? Are they difficult to get a hold of? Where do I start at the county courthouse? That's from one of our listeners, Eric.
Yeah, great question. Now, basically, it's just an index of the cases filed. If you get a traffic ticket, your name is put on a list of people who got traffic tickets that day. The cases are filed in a systematic way. So all and each courthouse is a different system or a numbering system, but you need to go to your local courthouse, and many times it's online. Many times it's online. Some states are non-disclosure states, and it's a little less available, but go to your courthouse. It is public record. It's public information. And ask to see a recent probate case, or ask, you know, how you would look at a recent probate case. They'll look at you a little funny, but that's okay. Just, I'm doing some research. I need to see a probate case. And at that point, you know, you can find out what the indexing system looks like, what the numbering system looks like. And once you find the numbering system, then you know how to access any case that you might have an interest in.
I love it. Well, Chris, you're just amazing. This is a great little tip and certainly sets the stage for us to ourselves not fall in this trap. How do people I've sent clients your way all the time to get education and training and support. I know you even have properties for sale out in the area. You're a property manager for one of my properties. You've just been wonderful, a good friend, and I appreciate you coming on the show. You've been such a good friend. But how do people get a hold of you if they'd like to learn more from you or get access some of your training?
Yeah, they can telephone me at 217-497-3970, 217-497-3970, or they can email me at chris@homebuyersperspective.com, HomeBuyersPerspective.com. So, and that was a big marketing mistake. I needed to take your training in marketing before I did that one, but that's what it is.
No, it's all right. Well, and Chris's link is in our newsletter, folks, so you can track him down or email me. But it's phenomenal that Chris, you'll come on the show, give us your personal phone number and your personal email. I know that you return all your emails promptly and pick up your own calls. So, folks, if you're looking for a buy and hold property in Illinois, this is the man. And some training from him and a little tour and a write-off to go to Chicago I can't recommend it more. So, Chris, thanks for joining us today, and I know you're going to be listening in to our next expert I'm bringing onto the show to help us avoid running into Chris down at the courthouse.
That's right. Well, thanks for having me on, Mark.
Chris, you're awesome. Thank you. Well, folks, this brings us to our next expert who does just that. He helps families that are in that situation where they haven't done proper planning, or maybe they did a little planning, but they don't know what they're doing. And as Chris mentioned, some people sign on to this job as executor or trustee and are overwhelmed and need some support and help. So I'm excited to introduce a new partner of ours, Ray Creel. He's out of Southern California and in the Fountain Valley area, and he is a graduate from USC, so don't bring up the UCLA topic with him. And he's been a CPA for, 30-plus years, helping clients all over Southern California. He runs an incredible firm and a team and in the last 2 years, he's specialized more and more in estate closings and helping many of his clients as they've had loved ones pass away. And it's just a wonderful service he provides. So we're excited to have him here. Ray, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark, and thank you for having me on your show. And I'm so excited about sharing this new area with your listeners. I can't even believe how excited I am.
Well, I know, and I know that sounds odd that some of you may be listening, who's this guy? Why is he excited about this? But Ray, you've told me yourself that, many, many families, they're in tears hugging you when the process is over because it's not just a financial transaction. You're really providing value that families in a sensitive situation just feel is invaluable. Maybe share that
Mark,
thought
I've
with us.
I've never received so many thank yous and hugs and kisses from my clients as it is in this area. They all appreciate everything we do for them from the start to the finish through this very difficult process.
Gosh, I almost get a little emotional. You and I have had conversations in detail about it, and I can for anybody that's gone through the passing of a loved one and had to help with the estate, it can be overwhelming when you're trying to grieve. Ray, maybe before we talk about how to prevent a disaster in an estate closing, and it's something I've talked about many times with the revocable living trust. We'll talk about that here in a moment and what role it can play. But even if someone does have a pretty well-organized estate, there's still a lot to be done. Maybe give us an example of some of the things that you there's a great article, folks, that I mentioned earlier in our newsletter today that goes through a laundry list of things. But what are some of the important things that jump out to you that you really help families with that they may not expect?
Well, the first thing would be when I heard this statistic that there will be $20 trillion of wealth passed in the next 20 years, I knew that we needed to be involved with that in order to pass that wealth to individuals who the deceased wanted to have that wealth transferred to them, the beneficiaries. So that was the first thing. The second thing we found is that a lot of trustees, executors, and so forth out there really don't know how to pass that money to the beneficiaries. So what we do, which is we feel is a very valuable service, we work with the trustees and executors to move that money to the beneficiaries from the time the person dies to the time that money is transferred. And then we even work down to where we even close the trust bank account. So the trustees need this kind of service where someone holds their hand through the whole process. And what we do, as you know, is we prepare a customized worksheet to show the trustee each and every step that they need to do in order to close the estate. Each estate, Mark, is different from the previous estate. So they're all a little bit different, and that's why we prepare a customized worksheet.
Well, it's true. You could have an estate that has valuable artwork or collections. It could have gold, silver, stocks, bonds, self-directed real estate, individual pieces of real estate, life insurance. The list goes on and on probably. And if you're a trustee helping out a family member and you've never dealt with these things before, you probably need that support to keep your sanity.
It's incredibly difficult for most people to navigate through the assets of an estate, and that's where we just calm them down through this grieving process and make sure that everything is done properly. And the most important thing is that the beneficiaries receive what they're entitled to. You know, a lot of times we'll find that the beneficiaries are not getting what they're entitled to.
Well,
and the other thing that we find is that, unfortunately, there's a lot of fraud involved in the passing of these estates. So that's where we like to come in as early as we can, Mark, to to avoid the fraud aspect of this thing, which we found, unfortunately, in about 20 to 25% of the cases, there's fraud involved, which is really unfortunate.
Well, and this kind of leads to what Chris Alban was talking about a minute ago, that families that are family members that are acting as trustee or executor may feel the pressure to wrap things up. They don't know what to do, so they make poor decisions. But when you're serving as the estate closer, you're probably able to help everybody keep their senses a little bit more, slow things down, you sell property for its highest value, so that if a Chris Alban student comes along, you're able to say, hey, we're not going to sell for cash. We're going to do what we need to list this properly and maybe get a higher return on this asset. And so you're able to help people in the probate. For things that do need to be probated, you're able to help avoid rash decisions.
That's correct, Mark. And what we're finding is that real estate is the biggest portion of most estates, other than maybe if they have an IRA or deferred pension. So we work to make sure that the trustee gets maximum dollars for the real estate and passes that money on to the beneficiaries without discounting it or any fraud involved in those kind of things.
Well, the fraud I think you're referencing is something that can divide families, because these people that are trustees or executors might make self-serving decisions, and that's really probably what you're referencing. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I can give you an example, if you like, of one of the frauds that we got involved with, which is kind of interesting. Would you like to hear an example of that?
Yes, sir. Throw it out there.
Oh, okay. We had a client contact us about 2 years ago and said that they had a rather involved estate and would like us to take a look at it. They heard about us through the grapevine, and fortunately it was one of our good clients that we'd had for years. Sent them over, and we went through boxes and boxes of information regarding the estate. And what we found was that the brother, who was the co-trustee to the sister, who was the one that retained us, had committed fraud in that he had put a mortgage on the rental property unbeknownst to the sister, and did it illegally without the sister's signature. He forged her signature, and he received the mortgage money, and then he proceeded to sit and squat on the property for 2 years rent-free. And then he also absconded with some cash. Now, what we're finding, Mark, is that most of the people are not prosecuting sisters and brothers and those kind of people, so she didn't press any charges. But she got taken for about $150,000 in money she should have received as a beneficiary. If she had brought us in to begin with, we feel this would have never happened. Oh, and the other thing, Mark, I need to mention is that we don't do anything without the advice of attorneys, estate attorneys. We send them the custom worksheet. We make sure that we cross, all the T's and dot all the I's and have all the legal documents. Everything is titled properly and moved on properly to the beneficiaries.
Well, shocking what can happen in a family in that situation. And I, as an attorney helping with estates, I see it too, and it's just sad. I probably have a phone call every 2 weeks where a family member feels like they're out in the cold on an estate. Well, this brings up the living trust. Let's give a tip here, and I think this is critical for those that think, well, I don't want this to happen to me. I'm setting up this T-ball. It's not even a softball. I'm putting the ball out on the tee here. So if you have kids in T-ball right now, I'm just going to set it up there. What is that number one document that can help keep things organized and out of probate? what do families need to think about?
Well, they need to think about doing estate documents, period. But, of course, if they qualify, they want to do a living trust to avoid probate. Probate is extremely expensive proposition, so if you can avoid it at all, you want to avoid it. Estate documents just are a roadmap to what the person really wants to happen in the event something happens to them. So it's not only that the living trust, if it, and if the assets are titled properly in the trust name, you can make health decisions, you can make financial decisions, and if you have young children, it can also name guardians for your young children. I recommend that everybody look at some kind of an estate document, at least a will and is necessary, and a lot of times a living trust is necessary as well. And it not only avoids probate, but it gives people, like I said, the opportunity to say, how do I really want all of these things laid out? So it's just good to visit a good estate planner or at least do estate planning documents.
No, I completely concur. And I know even if you have a trust, it doesn't mean that you're automatically going to avoid probate. It's keeping that trust funded. I'm sure.
That's correct.
I'll just ask Chris here, too. I mean, Chris, I know you're still with us, but Chris, you probably in probate still see families that have living trusts, but they didn't transfer the property into the trust. Is that right, Chris?
Yes. In fact, many people thought they avoided probate, and they found that probate is absolutely necessary when they failed to plan properly, when they didn't fund it.
Wow. But before I forget, too, I wanted to bring this up, too, Ray, is it's not always just the legal matters. It's filing the final tax returns. It's opening bank accounts.
That's correct.
What are some of the tax returns people may not expect that they have to file?
Well, you have to do, in most cases, a fiduciary tax return. It's called a Form 1041, and in the state of California, it's also a Form 541. And then now they have, Mark, they have where portability, where if you have a couple and one of the husband or wife dies, you can get what they call portability. So you have to file a U.S. estate tax return, and that preserves your portability. So in a lot of cases, we have to file this U.S. Tax return. Then a lot of times you have to file the final personal tax return, which is called the Form 1040. And in California, there's a 540. And then what we notice, too, is that sometimes there have been gifts made out of the estate, so you have to file gift tax returns, Form 709. And then the other thing that we do is we account for all of the assets in the estate to make sure they're all accounted for, even cash. That's maybe the person's held some cash in a safe or something like that. We try to account for everything and have the beneficiaries receive everything they're entitled to. What? And so we track all of the assets and all of the income of the estate. And we make sure, again, that we pass all this through the trustee to the beneficiaries intact so that they get everything they deserve. And then the other thing that we do, Mark, is we keep the trustee with their duties so that they don't do something they're not supposed to do in violation of the trust or in violation of the law, so that we hold their hand through the entire process, A to Z, so that they have no problems being a trustee.
Well, folks, you can see why when Ray lists this laundry list of things that are required at closing an estate, why these folks get overwhelmed, and when Chris Alvin comes along and says, hey, let me take this property off your hand for cash, they go, please do it. So you can see the overwhelm. Now, folks, yep. Ray Creel is going to be writing some additional articles in our newsletter over the months to come on how to find a good estate closer, what are the steps in an estate closing. We're going to have multiple articles, and I'm sure have Ray back on the show. I also want to tell Chris, thank you again. Chris, you're awesome. We really appreciate you finding some time to be with us.
Oh, thank you, Mark. I appreciate your inviting me on. I learned a lot.
Well, I appreciate that. That's always a good – I can't believe that. But, Ray, how do people get a hold of you? Ray, what's your best website to send people to?
Well, my email address is rc@raycreel, which is spelled raycreel.com. So rc@raycreel.com. And then if they'd like to phone me, is that okay, Mark, if they phone me?
Yeah, throw it out there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's 714-271-0963. Again, that's 714-271-0963. 0963.
Well, I love it. Ray, thanks so much for being with us. We know we're going to have
you
back.
My
pleasure. Thank you. And, and folks, please get your estate planning done. And if you're looking for real estate deals, probate should be your next best option to find those deals. Get with Chris Allen, do some training. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.